Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know our wonderful guest, the one and only Carmen Vitale. You can find her on Fox Sports Radio, as well as on social media at Carmi V. Carmen, it is great to be chatting with you this morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little concerned about Packers fans right now, but let's talk about it. I'm here. You can vent. We can talk about it.
I'm concerned for Packers fans as well. That was a very difficult and frustrating game in Carolina, one that you were not expecting to be difficult and frustrating, yet here we are. Let's start there, and then we'll break in all the minutia of all of it surrounding it. What happened, Carmen? Why did this team that has been mostly good, that has very high expectations, that was 13.5-point favorites, that was playing at home, where when they have looked good, they've primarily looked really good at home, not be able to get the job done against a Carolina Panthers team that's been, they've been fine, okay, whatever, but certainly not a team that's expected to be at Green Bay's level.
Yeah, I mean, they're at 500. Like, I think that there's a stigma surrounding the Carolina Panthers, and you know, rightfully so, no one fully trusts them because they melt down, you know, against really good teams, and that's been kind of their MO this season so far. And so you kind of expected, all right, the Packers are coming in, the Packers are a good team, the Carolina should melt down, right? Well, that's not exactly what happened. They had a very good game plan against the Green Bay Packers, one that apparently Matt LaFleur saw coming. And I don't really have an answer. I mean, it was just sloppy from start to finish. And I think one of the kind of overarching themes that I've noticed about the Packers this season is the first half, they seem to dig themselves into a hole more often than not, that they eventually climb out of in the second half. And, you know, you talk about the halftime adjustments and how good Matt LaFleur is at halftime adjustments and this, that, the other. But then when it does, those adjustments don't happen for one reason or another, you're left with, you know, the fact that you are in a hole, and that kind of dictates how you can play the rest of the game. I mean, I think I'm not the only one left wanting for more of a run game. For instance, like, you have Josh Jacobs, you figured out theoretically who is playing where on the offensive line. Why aren't you running the ball more? And it's like, oh, well, you're playing from behind quite a bit, or you're, especially in the first half. And so it's preventing you from getting a run game going, which again opens up so many other things for the offense and Jordan Love in particular. And then, I mean, to literally add insult to injury, the Tucker Kraft injury is just catastrophic at this point. I was sick to my stomach when I saw that. I I was sick the rest of the day, honestly, because I love him as a player and what he does for this offense.
Yeah, it was one of those things when it happened live, I felt sort of better about the fact, because usually you see like an ACL, it's like a non-contact injury or something, you know, like they go to play early, like same thing with the Achilles or something. And he's like, you look at it and there's looks like their collision almost looked like they banged knees or like at first.
Right. I'm like, oh, glimpse. You know,
And then he goes into the tent and then he comes out, he's got the towel over his head. I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good, but like it can't be an ACL, right? And then of course it's an ACL. I want to go back to some of those adjustments and things like that. It seemed pretty clear that Matt thought they had a way to attack on the outsides in this game with all the different screen calls. And some of them were like a run pass option where they could either run or go to the screen on the outside. But it felt like they had a game plan for that. That was pretty, you know, consistent throughout, or that they saw something that they wanted to attack on the outsides. What I struggle. And I think my guess is like a couple of those plays that were stopped early on the outside screens were kind of there for them, but they just didn't execute it well. And so I think he's probably looking at it saying like, this stuff's still there. We worked on it this week. We game plan for this. Guys just need to go out and execute it better. But when it happens over and over and over again, where you're not getting any yardage and they're consistent, the defense is consistently all over it. At some point, like it needs to click of like, all right, we probably don't need to go there, especially in some like a key third down, third and four situation that it ends up in a fourth and eight. And then you make the decision poorly to go for it on fourth and eight. It just felt like everything spiraled and snowballed in this game, and everything that they prepared for didn't work and Carolina was ready for. And there was just a lack of evolution in this game or adjustments in this game to get the specifically the offense back on track and really try to help out a defense that held the Panthers to 16 points. And if you could have gotten some points or the lead on your own, they have an easier day at the office where Rico Dowdle isn't just running, 30 to whatever it was, 150 yards on the day. And you could have maybe got after the quarterback a little bit more, but they just needed to make better adjustments and it didn't feel like they did.
No, and I do think that, like, the defensive effort, for the most part, I will obviously say for what Rico Dotto was able to do, but, like, was pretty balanced. And again, when you hold an opponent to 16 points, especially when you have the offense that the Packers do, you, like, 9 times out of 10, that's a win. And it just so happened that this wasn't, and there were some, I think that combined with just some catastrophic decisions that were made that were mistakes that ended up, turning into points, and or at least stifling the Packers' attempt at points. There was just no rhythm to the offense. And I think that that's been kind of, again, the story, especially in the first half for this team for a lot of it. And I just like, you're relying way too much on Jordan Love making some of these insane plays. And so that it breeds this necessity for him to do that, and even when it's not there, and even when it is throwing into triple coverage and all that other stuff, because that's what it's taken up until this point, and it just didn't happen this time around. I'm not gonna glean that their season's over or that this isn't actually a good team and all that. Like, I'm not looking necessarily beyond this game. I'm not doom and gloom about it. Again, we talked about this last week. If you're going to say that it's an any given Sunday league and that their parity is at an all-time high and this, that, the other, these things are going to happen. Now it just matters, it would be very Packers to then bounce back against the Eagles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which they're favorites in. So we'll talk about that as well. And it, then it would be very Packers to lose to the Giants the week after that as well. So we'll see what these next couple weeks bring for Green Bay. But we talked about the evolution and the, sort of the offense and the need to evolve and adapt, et cetera. That obviously takes on a completely different meaning, context, and just need now that Tucker Kraft is out for the season. As Justice Mosqueda and I talked about yesterday, your easy button's gone. The ability just to give him the ball and him to, kind of take it for extra yardage, that no longer exists. So you're going to have to evolve this offense. It's going to have to look inherently different than what it's looked like so far, because you don't have him out there. So how does this Green Bay offense that's already been with Tucker Kraft a little bit stagnant, stale, blah, unimaginative, whatever you want to call it, now has to figure out something new without maybe their biggest weapon?
Yeah, I think my biggest question, like before the Tucker Kraft injury too, was like the Packers are well outside the top 10 when it comes to 12 personnel usage. And I'm like, you have Tucker, you have Luke Musgrave. You've shown in the past that you know what to do with tight ends. I think Matt LaFleur carries that reputation of knowing what to do with tight ends. And we weren't seeing that this year. We weren't seeing them exploit those matchups and use those guys in the ways that you theoretically can when you have two all-around tight ends. I mean, Luke Musgrave is a guy that can catch the football, obviously. He's a good blocker. Like, these are two guys that a defense isn't going to know what they're doing on any given down. So why aren't you exploiting both of those matchups as much as possible? That was always kind of confusing to me. And now, it could be as simple as, hey, I remember a time when we all thought Luke Musgrave was the guy and that Tucker Kraft was his, was his understudy. And Luke gets injured. Tucker kind of rises up, takes his spot, is like, no, I'm the dude. And you're like, yeah, you're the dude. But is there still, a lot? I think there's still a lot left untapped with Luke Musgrave. Could it be as simple as, Luke Musgrave just stepping up? Yes. Do I think it's going to be that simple? No. I do think that there's going to need to be some adjustments when it comes to, again, utilizing what you have at different areas of the offensive field. Like, use Josh Jacobs. Why aren't we using more of Josh Jacobs? Why aren't you running the football more? You seemingly have all the horses to do it. So do that. make this offense, you know, multi-dimensional, and maybe you don't find yourself in those holes in the first half that you have to dig your way out of and therefore pass the ball more than you would like to. I mean, there's going to have to be adjustments at multiple levels, I think, of this offense to make up for what Tucker Kraft gave you because of how many yards after the catch he was able to get. And because he was, like you said, the easy button. Jordan Love didn't have to do much. He just had to get Tucker the ball, and like it could be a 6-yard pass that Tucker would turn into a 20-yard gain. Like,
yep.
You need someone to do that, but I don't think it's going to be just one person because those type of players don't come along very often, which is why this injury was so catastrophic.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. It starts with a running game. They've wanted to be a Josh Jacobs-led offense with him being able to run the football. They just haven't been. That's not been their DNA so far this year. They either need to get away from that and go, you know, a little bit more in Jordan Love's hands, or if they're going to continue to be a Josh Jacobs team, they need to find a way to run more effectively. And as far as Musgrave goes, I'm going to be really interested because we're going to get our sort of verdict on, you know, if Musgrave comes out and plays really well, then you almost go back and say, like, why was the two tight end stuff with Musgrave and Kraft not more, like, why was that not more prevalent? If Musgrave comes out and can't do a whole heck of a lot and struggles in blocking and, you know, can't get open and no run after the catch, then we might see of like, all right, well, I guess that's why they didn't use it as much. But I still think there's a lot of talent there. Whether or not he can recognize that remains to be seen, but he is going to be a massive key to this team moving forward. He can't be Tucker Kraft. That's not what's going to happen, but he needs to still be a weapon, and he needs to be more than serviceable for an offense that still needs a big time weapon at that tight end position. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now it's time to start getting ready for week 10. We've got a huge one Monday night, Philly coming to Green Bay. This should be a huge opportunity for Green Bay, and I'm expecting a heavy dose of Josh Jacobs in what hopes to be a bounce back win for Green Bay. Elsewhere in week 10, I'm going with big games from Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and Quinshon Judkins. The best part, Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter your play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today. Use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Hey friends, we've all gone through difficult times, whether it be with addiction, heartbreak, financial troubles, or hundreds of other challenging situations that get presented to us on a day-to-day basis. I know I certainly have, and if you have, just know you're not alone. And the thing is, taking care of your mental health shouldn't be harder than taking care of your physical health. If you pull a muscle, you go see a doctor. But when it comes to finding the right therapist, suddenly it's frustrating. You've got long wait lists or you're staring down huge out-of-pocket costs. That's what usually stops people from getting help. That's where Rula comes in. Rula makes therapy simple, affordable, and fast. They work with most major insurance plans, and the average session copay is just $15. Just 15 bucks. Every therapist on the platform is licensed, vetted, and picked for their expertise, so you know you're going to talk to somebody legit, not just whoever happens to be available. And getting started could not be easier. You answer a few quick questions about what matters to you, and Rula connects you with in-network providers who actually fit your needs. You pick the time, and you could be talking to a therapist as soon as the next day. I can't stress enough how much therapy has been a blessing in my life, and it can be in yours as well. And Rula gives you that opportunity without having to break the bank. Now, thousands of guys have already used Rula to finally get the care they've needed, so don't keep putting it off. Go to Rula.com/Packaday and get started today. That's RULA.com/Packaday. Take the first step, get connected, and take control of your mental health.
Yeah, and be that safety blanket. I mean, he like, is he going to be the easy button that Tucker Kraft was? No, because again, clearly Tucker Kraft has like separated himself as a player. But tight ends in general are a safety blanket for their quarterbacks. And that's what you want to see out of Jordan Love, because you also want to see Jordan Love be able to take that stuff underneath, even if it doesn't go for a 20-yard gain. Sometimes just a 6-yard gain is great. That's all you need. And, yep. You know, to not get behind the sticks. And especially with the way that the Packers seem to commit penalties at the exact worst moment every single time, and you get behind the chains in that way. I mean, if you can just stay ahead of the sticks as much as possible, it doesn't have to be flashy. It doesn't have to be, you know, these heroics. It just needs to be, hey, if you get 6 yards of down, you're going to move down the field. It's going to be methodical. You're going to control the clock. You're going to, like, all of, there's nothing bad that can come of that. And you just kind of have to, I think, save Jordan Love from himself sometimes.
Yeah, patience is going to have to be a virtue as teams continue to play these soft zone coverages against Green Bay. We saw it against Pittsburgh. They stayed very patient, mm-hmm. although, again, the big thing in that game was Tucker Kraft took a lot of those short passes and turned them into huge gains in that game. Exactly. Yeah, so, but, you know, they stayed patient. It worked. They're going to have to probably do a little bit more of that moving forward as well. But as we wrap up the Tucker Kraft portion of this, I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned, you know, you've got two losses. So does everyone else in the league. It's a any given week sort of league. You know, the Packers are still a really good team and have the opportunity to contend. I totally agree with all that based on, you know, the results and whatever so far and what's still to come. Everything's still in front of them. But when it comes to Tucker Kraft, to you, how much Super Bowl equity does this team lose because now they don't have one of their best players on the team, not much less just on offense?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it affects how confident you are with where Green Bay can go. However, my reasoning for thinking that, you know, Green Bay was a true Super Bowl contender came because of the Micah Parsons trade. And it's something that I've talked about a lot this offseason where I was like, this team, as weird as it sounds, with a team that has Jordan Love, and for as much as I have demonstrated, I believe, in Jordan Love, because I do, this team was always going to go the way that the defense went. And how good the defense could be. And I know that the Carolina game is not a good example of that because, again, the defense did their job for the most part and they still didn't win the game. And I think, you know, when there is a catastrophic injury like that that happens in the game, there's a domino effect to that. And so I'm willing to take that more as a one-off because, again, 9 times out of 10, your defense holds an opponent to 16 points. You're going to win that game. So I really do believe in this team because I believe that, you know, their defensive personnel is so good at every single level. I mean, they're just complete in that way. And if you can continue to hold opponents and take the ball and get more takeaways, I mean, I think that's one thing that they're still wanting for is more takeaways. But if you can find that groove again, like you had last year on top of the improved pass rush, then, I mean, I still think that this is a really good contender and then it has as much of a chance as any of these teams. That's the other good news for the Packers is like, who else are you really that confident in, especially in the NFC at this point? I mean, okay, Philadelphia, but if you go out and beat Philadelphia this week, like how am I supposed to take you any less seriously than them then? You know what I mean? Yep. So like, I think that nobody has really grabbed the bull by the horns this season across the league. When you look at it of like, these are definitely Super Bowl contenders. We are halfway through the season. It would be completely, you know, we've seen it happen before where we're like, oh, this team is like unstoppable. They're going to run right to the postseason at the very least. That hasn't really happened. And even in the division, you talk about Detroit, who on paper still, and, you know, clearly they survived the coaching attrition very well. They made that transition almost seamlessly, save for the first game of the season. But their injuries are stacking up again. So I'm like, I can't be confident in them either. So if it has to be someone, it still could be the Packers.
Yeah, none of these teams right now in the NFL as a whole should be satisfied with where their teams are at. Every single one has room for growth and improvement and has to figure out and iron out some issues on their own side of things before they're ready to contend for a Super Bowl. The Rams are the one I will say I'm keeping a little bit of a close eye on in the NFC. I think they're a hell of a good football team, and if they can stay healthy, I think they're going to be very dangerous come playoff time. But we'll wait and see on exactly how that happens because there's a lot of time left, and to your other point, injuries can play a major factor, just as we saw this past week, unfortunately, with Green Bay. One of the things I wanted to ask you about as well, this is a team that when the offseason started or when the last season ended, Brian Gutekunst came out and said, we've got to have urgency. It's time for this team to start winning championships. And he backed that up by trading for Micah Parsons and making sort of an all-in sort of move for this upcoming window, not just this year, but maybe the next few years. But everything else that happened in the offseason wasn't maybe necessarily done without urgency, but he understood the importance of maybe getting these things right and having some hits and trying to get this team even supercharged to compete right now. And right now, the impact of all of those players besides Micah Parsons, which is a big asterisk. That's a huge besides. Like, he's been amazing.
Right.
You sign Aaron Banks to a huge deal. He's been really banged up, got another injury this week. And then he's been, when out there, okay. He certainly hasn't been the huge free agent signing that you would hope that you would get when you spend that much money. Nate Hobbs, another big free agent signing. You know, very high-end market if you're looking at him as a slot corner, even still a really good deal for a starting corner, regardless of what position. And he has struggled mightily, got benched a couple weeks ago, played minimal snaps this week. I thought he looked really tough again, and now he's going to be out for a couple more weeks with an injury. And then you look at the draft, and everyone is excited about Matthew Golden. I still think Matthew Golden is really talented. I think it's a matter of when, not if. I think it's just getting him the ball a little bit more and being a little bit more concerted in the effort of getting him the ball. I don't think Golden's doing anything wrong as of yet, but we haven't seen the impact from Golden. And then Anthony Belton is not playing. Savion Williams is kick returner, handful of snaps here and there. Hasn't made a huge impact other than the fumble against Carolina this week, which was a catastrophic play. Baron Sorrell this week, I think, was down to one snap on defense. Colin Oliver has been hurt the entire year. Warren Brinson has been inactive on any game that they have had all four of their other defensive tackles. Micah Robinson's currently a Tennessee Titan, and John Williams is probably going to be out for the entire year. So this free agent and draft class, you know, outside of, again, the massive swing for Micah Parsons, which has worked out beautifully, has not really shown what they were hoping for, and they have not really helped this 2025 team.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that, like, before the Micah Parsons trade, everybody was excited about all of those moves. And now you're thinking, like, oh, God, if they hadn't made that Micah Parsons trade, this would be, like, it'd be in a really bad way, right? Yep. And, I mean, so much of that is luck, too. I don't necessarily think that it's – I mean, maybe it can come down to, like, you know – Nate Hobbs being the injury aside, that is luck. That's bad luck. But maybe he wasn't as good of a fit for this defense as you initially thought, or stuff like that. That it's just, it reminds you that this is all kind of a roll of the dice. But it's when you have this much bad luck, it's natural to wonder, like, all right, like what's flawed in this process? There has to be some sort of flaw in this process. And I mean, that's for the front office to figure out, but it certainly doesn't make you feel any better because, yeah, you went into this season thinking, all right, you addressed everything that you needed to very handily. Like, you took the big swing with the offensive lineman. You went and got some help for that secondary. You took a receiver in the first round for the first time in decades. Like, those things are indicative of urgency. But none of them have panned out. I think with Matthew Golden in particular, you have to find, like, the hierarchy in this receiver core. If you're Matt LaFleur, if you're Jordan Love, like, you have to figure out who is your guy, who's the second guy, who's the third guy. And I realize that I think people get confused with, like, all right, you have all these options, which is great, and that it makes it really hard to game plan for and this, that, the other. I think we're putting too much stock in the fact that, like, if it's very obvious who your first receiver and your second receiver are, then that takes away some of the gamesmanship. I don't personally think it does, because you still have those options on the field. And I think it gives everyone a clearer picture on your offense of where the ball is going to go, what guys can expect, and then get more into a rhythm with this offense, which is not something we've really seen so far this season. I think the sheer availability of those guys is great, but you need to establish some sort of hierarchy if you expect to get into any sort of rhythm, and that's not something we've seen so far.
I like Green Bay's overall general philosophy of having depth and competition, and everyone's going to have to compete. That's fine and well. Let the competitions play out during practice and let that be the place. To me, this team has a little bit of an issue with getting their best players out on the field. And I talked about, like, Evan Williams is not playing some snaps at safety. He's arguably been their best safety. There's no reason whatsoever to take him off the field. Nate Hobbs has been categorically bad at corners so far. Mm-hmm. And Carrington Valentine, while not perfect, has played some pretty good football, yet you're still trying to rotate snaps. No, just go with Carrington Valentine. Let him be the guy. Your best two-time All-Pro kick returner has yet to return a kick for you this season. He hasn't done it a single time. Like, it just, and at wide receiver, it does feel like at times there's a little bit too much Malik Heath and Savion Williams. And can you just get a little bit more Matthew Golden and, you know, your top wide receivers out there? So it just feels like at times this team kind of overthinks it. And in the idea of the spirit of competition and everyone's getting some snaps, and it's like, just get your best guys out there. That's what every other team is doing. They're putting their best players on the field. They're putting them in positions to be successful. I think Matthew Golden's super talented. They've got to find a way to unlock him. And he's not, to me, getting paid off for some of the really good work that he's doing out there. We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Prealcohol. ZBiotics Prealcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/Packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code Packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/Packaday and use the code Packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code Packaday.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to just succinctly put it, of just like, just stop overthinking it, get your best guys out there, because that's I think what, you know, and that happens. Like, you have kind of paralysis of choice or whatever it's called, where like you have all these choices and you can't make those decisions, but like, that's your job. You have to be able to do that. And that's the only shot you have of, again, establishing a rhythm and some type of consistency and rapport, because otherwise, like, the chemistry between the quarterback and his receivers, just as an example, I know, like, you know, this exists all over the field, but that chemistry is so incredibly crucial, and you have to operate with some sort of intentionality in order to get them there. And, you know, we don't know what's going on in practice. Maybe like Matthew Golden is dropping a bunch of footballs and we just don't know. Like, that's I guess that's completely possible and plausible, but at the halfway point of the season, regardless of who it is, you should
figure
know
it out.
You should.
Yep.
Yeah,
very much so. No, we're 100% in lockstep on that. The good old paralysis by analysis is the
there it is. That's what I was looking exactly for.
Of course, as you mentioned, it's a week-to-week league, and the Packers have every right to go against Philly this week and find a way to win against Philly. They don't often lose two in a row at home. This is going to be a huge game in the NFC. What do they need to do to bounce back and pick up this win?
Yeah, I mean, I think the offensive line is just going to be incredibly crucial, because Philly's strength starts up front on that defense. I mean, their defense is complete as well, but like, they really need to just keep Jordan Love, you know, give him some time to throw. I mean, I wish that he was, for as much as they operate out of the screen game and they want to operate out of the screen game, Jordan Love is still taking his time with the football, which you don't love. I think against Carolina, his average time to throw was like 2.98 seconds. And you're just like, no, that's not going to work. Like, yeah, we need to get that to under 2.5 if you're going to try and operate a quick game. Because otherwise that just renders it clearly ineffective, which happened against the Panthers. So I think Jordan Love needs to work on getting the ball out quicker. I think the offensive line needs to hold a lot. I just think so much of this comes down to the trenches. And then you need to see a rapport grow between Jordan Love and Luke Musgrave pretty quickly here. I would love to see Luke Musgrave kind of be one of those safety blankets that Jordan Love can just kind of jump off and be a little bit more patient. And again, that helps with the quick game too. You know, just get the ball to your tight end, get the ball to Josh Jacobs in whatever way possible. I mean, just, I want them to be a little patient, but hurry up, if that makes sense.
No, tempo, but patience within this in what the defense is giving you, but some tempo, yes, would go a long way. And just trying to get this team maybe a little bit of a, a spark as well. But I ask you, please do not say the offensive line needs to hold. Based on what we saw last week, they might take that a little bit too literally. And
don't actually hold.
I'm totally kidding.
Insulate Jordan Love.
There we go. I appreciate that much more, because based on last week, they could again take it a little bit too literally. I'm with you. This offensive line needs to play a lot better. They got to find the right tempo and rhythm on offense. And then defensively, you mentioned it earlier, have to find a way to get those turnovers. You did have the one with X this past week. He had the forced fumble as well, an opportunity to get another one, but they've got to figure out a way to win that turnover battle. It's just, you're playing, you're already playing a lot of grinded out football. It just makes it so hard when you're losing the turnover battle. And you add on top of that, a big turnover on down on 4th and 8, a missed field goal from a 44 yard or whatever it was this past week. And
yeah, we haven't even gotten to the kicking game, have we?
Yeah, you're taking a lot of points off the board that are out there for you, and just not again putting yourself in a winning position, regardless of what team that you're going against. It feels like one of these games, turnovers have to come in bunches, Carmen. One of these games, maybe it can be this one.
I mean, we talked about that coming out of the bye, where it was like, okay, you know, this is where this needs to get going. The turnovers can come in bunches. And then from then on, it kind of, you know, the dam breaks, right? And then you get it. It's like that chicken or the egg thing of like, do you need to feel what it feels like before it can come? Or do you need to, you know, I don't know. It's just, it needs to happen, because again, especially against a team like Philly, who is capable of scoring a boatload of points because they have so many different offensive weapons, you need to be able to score points. And the best way to be able to do that is to A, limit the points that your opponent is scoring, but give your offense extra chances. And that's what's kind of been missing out of this defensive effort so far this season for the Packers, where it just hasn't, we haven't seen those bunches. We haven't seen a multi-turnover game. So it's just, or takeaway games, I should say. I need that to happen for this defense, because again, they have the horses. We know they have the horses, and it's just, It shouldn't be an either or type of thing. Like, you shouldn't have to choose between a pass rush and having takeaways. Like, that is supposed to work in conjunction with each other.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And again, it's going to be paramount that this team starts turning over teams a little bit more, and also taking care of the football on their side of things. It was a wild week in the NFC North. Of course, we talked about the Packers losing to the Carolina Panthers, but also Minnesota upsets Detroit, and Chicago gets a crazy, I would say come from behind win, but they were well ahead and then gave, you know, completely vomited up a 14-point lead, but then found a way to win at the end. Crazy week. I'll let you talk about that, but also some big games this week: Bears, Giants, Vikings, Ravens. Vikings, Ravens almost feels like a playoff elimination game. Like, the loser of that one is just really behind the eight ball. The winner still got a puncher's chance. And then Lions, Commanders, which to me feels like the lead pipe lock of the week, with all the stuff that the Commanders are going through and a billion injuries, and the Lions going to be super pissed off based on their loss to Minnesota. But thoughts on the slate of games in the NFC North overall?
Yeah, I mean, the Bears had a 97% chance of winning that game with inside 2 minutes, and then with 42 seconds left, all of a sudden Cincinnati had an 87% chance of winning the game. It was just, it was an absolutely insane thing. But I mean, what Ben Johnson is doing for the Chicago Bears is changing the narrative of a team that found a way to lose games versus now a team that has found a way to win games. Sure. It's not pretty. It's not ugly. They are not playing consistently good football, but they are still a team that is undoubtedly ascending. And when you're talking about just kind of the sheer kind of variance in the NFC North right now, I mean, I talked about it leading into this season, where I was like, I don't think it's going to take 15 wins to win this division anymore. And if it only takes 12 or so wins, any of these teams are capable of that if they put it all together. Now, the question marks are still there with the Vikings, and can J.J. McCarthy put it together, because, you know, he lost all that time with injury. He's got a rash of injuries along that offensive line, despite the fact that they addressed that in the offseason. So those are big question marks. Detroit still has the question marks of, are they going to stay healthy? I mean, they are dealing with their fair share of injuries. And while they're going to be pissed off this week, and I do think that they can handle the Commanders, I mean, they're just all over the place. They're dealing with some major injuries and some, a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the roster that they're fielding on every week basis, which I think opens the door, you know, for the Packers. And especially if they can take care of business against Philadelphia, they're still leading the division at the end of the day too, by the way. You know, they're a half game up. And now I think, you know, for as mad as I think we all were about that tie, it's looking pretty good right now. I don't know. We're going to see. The Bears, it'll be, you know, this is their game of they should take care of this. This is at home. You know, it's the New York Giants. They've been struggling with a bunch of stuff. Cam Scadaboo is no longer in the lineup. If they don't win this, you know, the pendulum's going to swing all the way back to the Bears sucking again. But we'll see. It's fun, and it's a really fun division to pay attention to, just because I still think it's the best in football, and it's definitely still up for grabs.
In a weird sort of way, the Packers owe the Vikings a debt of gratitude so far. If the Vikings don't upset, or not upset, but if they don't beat the Bears at the end of that first week, and if they don't beat the Lions, the Packers are in third in the NFC North right now, behind both the Bears and the Detroit Lions. So thank you, Minnesota Vikings, I guess. Now, obviously, Minnesota stays in this thing as well. So there's that.
I would say they're at 500.
They're at 500. You know. So this thing's very, very tight. But I think for the moment, I'm going to thank the Minnesota Vikings for taking care of the Lions and Bears. Otherwise, again, Green Bay would currently be sitting at third place in the NFC North. I think that's all I got today, Carmen. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, well, I weirdly have a lot of confidence in Green Bay Packers this week. We'll see if that comes around to bite me in the butt, but I don't know. I just, there's been a lot of volatility in that Eagles locker room, and, you know, I don't fully trust them still at this point of the season. So I think the door's wide open there.
As we're recording this, Matt LaFleur just started his press conference. LVN not going to practice today, but Dontavian Wicks is going to practice. So if they could get him back, that would be a potential boost
for
the
offense.
As we're recording, Packers still 2.5 point favorites for this game as well. So going to be interesting. I can't wait for this one. We'll break it all down next week with Carmen as well, next Friday. Carmen, I cannot thank you enough. Fox Sports Radio at Carmi V. Anything else you want to plug on the way out?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Follow her at Carmi V. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Packo.
Bye, guys.